So last Sunday, when we were invited to come and see by Jesus, to come and stay with him, to discover more about who he is and his way of life, well, today we're also called to follow. And our first reading from the book of Jonah, in some ways provides a negative example of this whole sense of responding to the call of the Lord. Jonah's a strange little story. It is short. There's only four chapters, a total of 48 verses across the four chapters. It's just one of the 12 minor prophets that are listed there in our scriptures. But interestingly, nowhere in the actual book is Jonah called a prophet. We meet Jonah only one other time in the scriptures, in the second book of Kings, in chapter 14, verses 23 to 25, which describes the reign of King Jeroboam II. And like many of the kings that are described there in 2 Kings, really we just get a couple of paragraphs about the whole of the reign of King Jeroboam, one of the very wicked kings. Like almost all of the 20 northern kings of Israel, all of them failed to do what was right according to the way of the Lord. And Jonah there preaches in favor of King Jeroboam. And in fact, we read in chapter 6 of the book of Amos that Amos was sent to preach against the writings and the teachings of the prophet Jonah. So it provides a bit of the background to this, that we're already wondering, is Jonah going to be a good guy or this weird kind of mix? The book itself is often described as very different ways, as an allegory, as a didactic story, as a fable, a fairy tale, a folk tale, a historical account, a legend, a midrash, a myth, a novella, a parable, a parody, a prophetic tale, a saga, a satire, a sermon, a short story, or a tragedy. All of the humor and the irony that is kind of drips out of the pages of this short story suggests that satire is perhaps one of the best ways to understand this book. It begins rather abruptly. Now the word of the Lord was addressed to Jonah, saying, "Go at once to Nineveh, that great city, and cry out against it, for their wickedness has come up before me." So that's the background to the story that we're given. Nineveh is the capital city of the Assyrian Empire. And during the time of the split kingdom, when there was the 10 tribes of Israel in the north and the two tribes of Judah in the southern kingdom to the south, Assyria was the major threat through that period. And in fact, Assyria was the nation, the empire, that came and invaded the northern kingdom and caused the destruction and the loss of all 10 tribes, that they were lost to history. People have been searching for these 10 tribes ever since. So the Ninevites and the Assyrians were the arch enemies of Israel. So when Jonah is invited to go and preach this path of repentance to the Lord, against the Ninevites, to call them to conversion, it's no wonder that there might be some resistance. So Nineveh is up in the modern part of Iraq. It's actually on the opposite bank of the contemporary city of Mosul, built there on as a wonderful city at the time, but just in ruins now. So Nineveh is there. So it's about 1,300 kilometers, so it would take him 2 or 3 months to walk to Nineveh. So there's another reason that Jonah mightn't be too impressed with this invitation to go and preach against the Ninevites. And what do we hear as the response of Jonah? Jonah set out to flee to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. And the next two verses repeat this word, the city Tarshish, again and again. The only time we get a reference to Tarshish anywhere in the scriptures. So where is Tarshish? So if Nineveh is to the east, Tarshish is on the Spanish coast. So it's the completely opposite direction. So rather than going on this journey by land to Nineveh to preach this message, Jonah instead flees to the coast, jumps on the first boat that he finds that's heading to Tarshish, and pays his way to get out of there. So he's going the wrong way. He's going the completely wrong direction, away from all of this. And then there are these stories that unfold in the first chapter about his encounters with the sailors, these pagans, And yet, there's full of the irony because the pagan soldiers are actually trying to seek the Lord. These pagan soldiers are trying to do the right thing. When they hear that that Jonah is a prophet of the Lord, they invite him to teach them and to instruct them what they should be doing when this storm arises and the ship is threatening to go down. But Jonah just offers these pious, stupid little comments, saying, "Ah, yes, I'm a prophet of the Most High, the God who made the heavens and the earth, the sea and the land." And yet he's there in the midst of the sea and is unable to do anything. He's not able to pray properly. So the sailors, you know, try and work out, well, how do we solve this problem of this terrible storm? And so they start throwing off cargo, but that's not enough to keep the ship afloat. And so they realize that they have to throw off even the people. And so Jonah volunteers to be one of those who are thrown overboard. And it seems to be a noble gesture of Jonah, but it's likely that he's in fact just trying to commit suicide to get away from the Lord. He says, well, if I die, then I will be released from this duty of having to go and preach against the Ninevites. And so the sailors are distressed by the fact that they have to throw Jonah overboard, but eventually he convinces them to do so. And so he's thrown overboard. And there's this small mercy of this strange fish that comes to swallow Jonah. And so for the next 3 days, he's there. You'd think he'd be repentant by this stage, that he's been saved from this watery grave. But the prayer that he prays in chapter 2 is, you know, it's a strange kind of prayer. There's no repentance. There's no offering of his heart or his life. But eventually at the end, he agrees to do what the Lord wants him to do. And so God, in his frustration, then causes the fish to vomit Jonah back onto the coast. And he's able to then make his way to Nineveh. And he begins to make this proclamation, this preaching. Again, it's a strange sermon that he offers. In the original Hebrew, down the bottom there, it's only 5 words. 40 days more, and Nineveh shall be overturned. And so he begins his preaching. He begins walking through this great city, 3 days to cross the city, and to tell this message. Now, it's an odd message in lots of ways, because for a lot of the things that it's missing, it doesn't tell the Ninevites why they're so bad. It doesn't offer any reason as to why God is annoyed with them. There's no solution that is offered. He doesn't offer a way forward. He doesn't call them to repentance. He doesn't say that you must give up all of these pagan idols or anything like that. And there's no mention of God in this message. So it's a strange kind of message. You know, was Jonah just doing the bare minimum in order to say, yes, I've preached against the Ninevites, when he's offered almost nothing by way of an actual sermon or a way that offers a message of hope to the people? And yet, the final word of his sermon there, this word that can be translated as destroyed, but it can also be translated as overturned. And so there is this sense of both usages in the scriptures. So, for example, in Genesis 19, you have the story of the overthrowing of the city of Sodom. So it's destroyed in that instance. But in 2 Samuel 6, you get another story about the overthrowing, the overturning of the heart of King Saul as he goes through one of his moods and is then converted again to the way of the Lord. So the sense of being overturned, or the turning over of the mind and the heart of the Ninevites. And in fact, that's what happens. They respond to this message. They respond to this preaching that Jonah is able to make in the city. And we're told from the highest to the nobles, to the common people, and even the animals, even the sheep and the cattle also are clothed in sackcloth, sit down in ashes. They also begin to fast. They also begin to offer reparation for their sins. And so this remarkably successful preaching career of Jonah, who's able to transform this whole city so that it won't be destroyed, but it will be redeemed. And Jonah goes off in a huff then and sits under the shade of a tree, just lamenting the fact that his preaching has been so successful and that the city has been overturned, but not in the way that he intended it. He won't be able to watch this destruction and the fireworks and all of the special effects that might be affected upon the city. And the story doesn't end well. It's just Jonah sitting there being angry at God and being caught up in his own grief and in just his sorry state of mind. But the invitation for us is to reflect upon the way that we often treat our enemies. And in all the story where there are so many stereotypes that do the exact opposite. The prophet who runs away from God, the pagans who turn their hearts over to the Lord and are converted by God. And it's a reminder that things are not always the way that they seem on the surface. Sometimes we need to go a bit deeper. Sometimes we need to go into the encounter, into that experience. And in the gospel today, we are invited to that same experience of repenting and believing. Just as the Ninevites were able to hear this message and turn their hearts back towards the Lord, away from all of their idols, all of their evil practices, we're invited immediately also, just as the four brothers, the two sets of two brothers, responded to the Lord in the gospel today and answered the call of Jesus to come and follow. They responded immediately, one of the favorite words of the gospel of Mark. We'll see it again and again across the pages. It's the Greek word euthys. It's this sense of this immediate desire, both of Jesus often is used, but of people to hear this message and respond immediately. We're invited to do the same, to leave all of those things that only lead us to destruction, all those things that only cause us grief, and to find life and salvation in Jesus alone.